Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, we have a lot to do here. Here it is December. Christmas is coming upon us, and we have all kinds of things to do. Mm-hmm. But I wanted, we're doing joy, love, gratitude, and happiness during the month of December. But on Monday night, I read these two cards from notes that I had taken, and I'm going to read them again because you people need to hear it, the ones who haven't. You know how always interested I am in genetics, because I do believe in genetics, but I do not believe that genetics is the key to everything. So here is more information on that. People like to bring diseases on their genes, but only a very small percentage of our major diseases are caused by genetics. Only a very small, you can change that genetic thing. Genetics plays an important role, but good nutrition can trump the genetic card. It's done with what you're eating. And this is what the American Medical Association will not tell you. And it's what our government will not tell you. And that's what the TV will not tell you. All you see on TV are fast food things, tons of meat, poetry, all that kind of stuff that you shouldn't be eating. But because of all the lobbies in Congress and so forth, you're going to get that. Also, you're going to get it because doctors have to make money. And if everyone was healthy, doctors would not be making money. And then there would be no insurance companies, and they wouldn't make money. And there'd be no pharmaceutical companies. So, anyway, if you're thinking about genetics and think, well, it runs in my family. Everyone has something running in their family, and we may be prone to have those things. If we follow the same lifestyle that our parents did, and we eat the same things that they did, yes, you're going to come down with these things. But what I think I am trying to say here is, God is always first cause. It has nothing to do with genetics whatsoever. There is such a thing as genetics, and you can prove genetics, but genetics is always going to be secondary causation. God is always going to be first cause. So if you go to a doctor and he says, well, it's in your genes, find a different doctor, people. Don't believe all that stuff. And if you really want to stay healthy for the rest of your life, notice what you're eating. Because you are what you eat, along with you are what you think. So, we like to blame this country and everybody. People around the world like to blame their health on something else. Your health is your own personal thing. You have to take care of it. You have to do that yourself. That's a responsibility that you have, is to do it. And most people who don't take care of their health and don't watch their nutrition and so forth are suffering from things like they don't know that they're worthy, deserving, totally level one, that they matter. So they just throw that away. And they eat anything that they want, and then they come down with diabetes, they come down with everything. Diabetes is just running very high in this country, is running high in this country at the present moment because of diet. If you change your diet, there's no absolute reason to have diabetes. And if you already have diabetes, if you change your diet, you can correct that in your system. You do not have to take all the pills and so forth that doctors tell you that you have to take. They give you the pills and tell you, just keep on eating all the pie you want. And it can't be. So you have to use wisdom. And with this teaching, with anything you're doing, you have to use your own wisdom. You have to think for yourself. Don't allow the world to think for you, which brings me up to this one. If everyone is thinking alike, then no one is thinking. Mm. Benjamin Franklin. Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful? If everyone is thinking alike, then no one is thinking. Okay, then. So, with that, let's do the matter dance, which the young lady doesn't know, but let me explain some things before we do it. This class is called Prosperity and Abundance, Including Money. But we try to stretch our consciousness. We try to know something about ourselves. When we know something better about ourselves, better things come into our life. Because we are the only people with our thinking that limits our own self. This thing that we call God is unlimited. So we want to know that we're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that we matter. When you know those things, you can attract what you want into your life. So with that, we'll do the matter dance. Mm-hmm. It's simple. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. Yay!
I sing that to the dogs every morning.
Good. Sing it to yourself and to the dogs every morning.
That's right.
And the reason why we do that, there are so many people that don't know that they're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that they matter. And this is very important to know. And the world is not going to tell you that, and most classes you go to are not going to tell you that. Books that you read on self-help are not going to tell you that. You're not going to find this because they take it for granted that you know it, or they don't know that that is what it's supposed to be. And that's why so many self-help books and so forth do not work, because the person that's writing them does not know that about themselves. So they cannot convey that to somebody else. But if you know those four items in your life, your whole life will change. With that then, tonight we're going to deviate just a little bit. Since it's Christmas, I'm going to read you...
And we're deviates.
I'm going to read you a fairy tale. And we'll see how this applies. Once upon a time, a long time ago, there lived very happy people called Tim and Maggie, with two children called John and Lucy. To understand how happy they were, you have to understand how things were in those days. You see, in those happy days, everyone was given at birth a small, soft, fuzzy bag. Anytime a person reached into his bag, he was able to pull out a warm fuzzy. Warm fuzzies were very much in demand because whenever someone was given a warm fuzzy, it made him feel warm and fuzzy all over. People who didn't get warm fuzzies regularly were in danger of developing a sickness in their back, which caused them to shrivel up and die. In those days, it was very, very easy to get warm fuzzies. Anytime someone felt like it, he might walk up to you and say, "I'd like to have a warm fuzzy." You would then reach into your bag and pull out a warm fuzzy the size of a small girl's hand. As soon as the fuzzy saw the light of day, it would smile and blossom into a large, shaggy, warm fuzzy. You then could lay it on the person's shoulder or head or lap, and it would snuggle up and melt right against their skin and make them feel good all over. People were always asking each other for warm fuzzies. And since they were always given freely, getting enough of them was never a problem. There were always plenty to go around, and as a consequence, everyone was happy and felt warm and fuzzy most of the time. One day, a bad witch became angry because someone was so happy and no one was buying her potions and salves. This witch was very clever, and she devised a very wicked plan. One beautiful morning, she crept up to Tim while Maggie was playing with their daughter and whispered in his ear, "See here, Tim, look at all the fuzzies that Maggie is giving to Lucy. You know, if she keeps it up, eventually she is going to run out, and then there won't be any left for you." Tim was astonished. He turned to the witch and said, "Do you mean to tell me that there isn't a warm fuzzy in our bag every time we reach into it?" And the witch said, "No, absolutely not. And once you run out, that's it. You don't have any more." With this, she flew away on her broom, laughing hysterically. Tim took this to heart and began to notice every time Maggie gave up a warm fuzzy to someone else. Eventually, he got so worried and upset because he liked Maggie's warm fuzzies very much and did not want to give them up. He certainly did not think it was right for Maggie to be spending all her warm fuzzies on children and other people. He began to complain every time he saw Maggie give up a warm fuzzy to someone else. And because Maggie liked him very much, she stopped giving warm fuzzies to other people as often and reserved them for him. The children watched this and soon began to get the idea that it was wrong to give up warm fuzzies. at any time you were asked, or felt like it. They too became very careful. They would watch their parents closely, and whenever they felt that one of their parents was giving too many fuzzies to the other, they also began to object. They began to feel worried whenever they gave away too many warm fuzzies, even though they found a warm fuzzy every time they reached into their bag. They reached in less and less, and became more and more stingy. Soon people began to notice the lack of warm fuzzies, and as they began to feel less and less fuzzy, they began to shrivel up, and occasionally people would die from lack of warm fuzzies. More and more people went to the witch to buy her potions and salves, even though they didn't seem to work. Well, the situation was getting pretty serious indeed. The bad witch, who had been watching all of this, didn't really want the people to die, so she devised a new plan. She gave everyone a bag that was very similar to the fuzzy bag, except that this one was cold, while the fuzzy bag was warm. Inside of the witch's bag were cold prickles. These cold prickles did not make people feel warm and fuzzy, but made them feel cold and prickly instead. But they did prevent people's backs from shriveling up. So from then on, every time someone said, "I want a warm fuzzy," people who were worried about depleting their supply would say, "I can't give you a warm fuzzy, but would you like a cold prickly?" Sometimes two people would walk up to each other thinking they could get a warm fuzzy, but one or the other of them would change his mind and they would wind up giving each other cold pricklies. So the end result was that while very few people were dying, a lot of people were still unhappy and feeling very cold and prickly. The situation got very complicated because since the coming of the witch, there were less and less warm fuzzies around. So warm fuzzies, which used to be thought of as free as air, became extremely valuable. This caused people to do all sorts of things in order to obtain them. Before the witch had appeared, people used to gather in groups of three or four and five, never caring too much who was giving warm fuzzies to whom. After the coming of the witch, people began to pair off to reserve all their warm fuzzies for each other exclusively. If ever one of the two persons forgot himself and gave a warm fuzzy to someone else, he would immediately feel guilty about it because he knew that his partner would probably resent the loss of a warm fuzzy. People who could not find a generous partner had to buy their warm fuzzies and had to work long hours to earn the money. Another thing which happened was that some people could take cold pricklies, which were limitless and freely available, coat them with white fuzzy, and pass them on as warm fuzzies. These counterfeit warm fuzzies were really plastic fuzzies, and they caused additional difficulties. For instance, two people would get together and freely exchange plastic fuzzies, which presumably should make them feel good, but they came away feeling bad instead. Since they thought they had been exchanging warm fuzzies, people grew very confused about this, never realizing that their cold prickly feelings were really the result of the fact that they had given a lot of plastic fuzzies. So the situation was very, very dismal, and it all started because of the coming of the witch, who made people believe that someday, when least expected, they might reach into their warm fuzzy bag and find no more. Not long ago, a young woman with big hips, born under the sign of Aquarius, came to this unhappy land. She had not heard about the bad witch and was not worried about running out of warm fuzzies. She gave them out freely, even when not asked. They called her the hip woman and disapproved of her because she was giving the children the idea that they should not worry about running out of warm fuzzies. The children liked her very much because they felt good around her, and they too began to give out warm fuzzies whenever they felt like it. The grown-ups became concerned and decided to pass a law to protect the children from depleting their supply of warm fuzzies. The law made it criminal offense to give out warm fuzzies in a reckless manner. The children, however, seemed not to care, and in spite of the law, they continued to give each other warm fuzzies whenever they felt like it, and always when asked. Because there were many, many children, almost as many as grown-ups, it began to look as if, maybe, they would have their way. As of now, it is hard to say what will happen. Will the grown-up forces of law and order stop the recklessness of the children? Are the grown-ups going to join with the hip woman and the children in taking chances that there will always be as many warm fuzzies as needed? Will they remember the days their children are trying to bring back when warm fuzzies were abundant because people gave them away? That's the end of that story. So, what do you think of that story? See what we did? Claude Steiner in 1969. I think it's a beautiful story. It shows what we do to ourselves all the time. It also shows, see, we came here with warm fuzzies, and we came here with a bag that is never depleted. Mm-hmm. But we're taught that our bag, we can't, it's not enough. We don't have enough. That there won't be enough. If you give things away, if you give all your warm fuzzies away, you see, so people start to get stingy and they start to hold on to all these different things. I think it's a very lovely story. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is, what are we going to do? The story is not ended. We are the ones who have to end this story, you see. We're the ones who have to remember that there is warm fuzzies in that bag, that you came here to this plane of action with everything you need to succeed. And you have a bag, think of that, filled with things. I call it a toolbox, and you have many, many tools in it. So you must be able to reach in there every time and find the right tool. And people don't do that. Or if they have the tool, they're afraid to use it. Don't be afraid to use it. What is the largest and the best and the biggest tool we have in our toolbox?
Imagination.
Your imagination. Your imagination is the largest tool that you have, and we fail to use that. So reach in there and pull out something every time. Don't be stingy. Especially don't be stingy with warm fuzzies. If you bring it down, look at all the people who won't give a compliment, who won't do this, who won't do that, or are waiting for the other person first. Well, if they said something nice to me, I'd say something nice to him. You have to be the one to start that and realize that it never runs out. You can just, this thing is abundant. The universe is abundant. So reach into your bag and bring something out each time that works for you. You see? Don't be stingy. Know that you live in a universe that is abundant, and that you have this wonderful gift called imagination. But you have a mind, and you use your mind and your imagination to get what you want in this life. It's all done with your thinking. What are you thinking about? How are you thinking? But particularly, how are you thinking about yourself? We are taught to spend so much time thinking about everything else but ourselves. And if we do start to think about ourselves, what do we say? Oh, that person's self-centered. That person's self-centered. Now, we are not self-centered. We think about ourselves, but we are centered in the self, which is different than being self-centered. And you have to remember that. You do really and truly have to make yourself number one. If you don't feel that you're number one, it's very difficult to make somebody else feel that they're number one. You see? So know that you're number one in your own life. and that you're absolutely whole, complete, and perfect, that you have everything available to you to succeed on this plane of action. That this thing that we call God would not have created you and put you here on this plane of action without the ability, to succeed and to thrive. You see, most people just want to survive. And they think, oh, if I get through this life, boy, that'll be it. You know. Well, that's one way of looking at it, but it's not a very nice way of looking at it. And if you think you're just here to survive from birth to death, that doesn't make much sense. You're here to absolutely thrive. These are the things that has to be passing through your mind. These are the things that you should be thinking about. See? What did Ralph Waldo Emerson say? He said, man was born to be rich, or inevitably grows rich, by the use of his faculties, by the use of his mind, by the use of his imagination. Get a grand idea. Get a grand idea about yourself. Then start to move in that direction. And you will have that for yourself. But do it. Don't sit around thinking bad things about yourself, bad things about the world, or bad things about anybody else. Try to train yourself to think only good thoughts. That's what you can do. We are the ones who have to learn to train our minds. Last night, I had rented a video. When I put it into the machine, there was absolutely no sound. I did everything I could to bring sound to it, which I knew how to do. No sound. Now, my mind said, oh, ripped off again. This is just dreadful. This always happens to me. And I finally said, now, Dallas, stop that. That's only your mind, and you know you're not your mind. So, why don't you watch this video and do the dialogue yourself? And put in the dialogue that you want. Have fun with this. So see, the whole idea is, if somebody gives you a lemon, make lemonade. Don't get all upset. I could have been completely upset, thrown a shoe through the machine, did anything. But I have control of my thinking. I have control of my mind. And I would have said, my whole evening is ruined because of that video. That video has nothing to do with ruining my mind. It's my thinking that has to do with ruining my mind. So once you change your thinking, you change your reality, you see. Remember, we do not see with our eyes, we see with our mind, we interpret everything. We are the people that are interpreting. So if you get anything in your life that you don't like, try to make something out of it. Dr. Bitzer said to me once, I do not make the best of anything. I make things the best. And you see, the world teaches you to make the best of things. The world teaches us to tolerate things. We're not here to tolerate things. This whole idea the outside world wants to tolerate something. What does that mean exactly? It means absolutely nothing. Well, I'll tolerate you, don't like you, I hate you, or everything, but I'll tolerate that. You see? You don't want to tolerate something. You want to learn to love something. You want to learn to make things the best, not make the best of things. And we can do that. So I had a wonderful evening. It became exciting and was sort of nice. And you know what I said to myself? Huh, this is just like watching a silent movie. Mm-hmm. You see? And people used to watch silent movies and think, oh, isn't that wonderful? So I did the same thing. And you know, you can tell what they're saying. You could, you know, I don't read lips, but you can tell what you're saying. You can't be that far off. I don't know if anyone ever went to the Last Remaining Seats programs that they have every summer. One year, well, that they take you downtown to all the old movie houses, and they show an old movie in those movie houses. And the one was The Thief of Baghdad with Fairbanks. That was Fairbanks, you know, and it was a silent movie. 10 minutes into it, you swear they're talking. They do all the right gestures, and whatever they're doing, you never miss it. You never miss it. You know? You just don't. How many people go to the ballet? You watch the ballet, you know exactly what they're doing and saying and so forth. There's no dialogue there in the ballet. But you know that, you see. But we get accustomed to, we have to have the talk, we have to have this. And we have expectations that come up. Learn to change your expectations immediately. You know. You're the one that's causing it, you see. So I could have absolutely had a miserable evening, couldn't I? But I chose not to have a miserable evening. So I didn't have a miserable evening. But it's done with your thinking. It's done with your mind. But we like to blame something else. We like to do that. And we're the one that's causing it. Years ago, there was a tape by Wayne Dyer. A whole series of them, in fact. But one of the particular things that he was talking about is the traffic. And the people say, oh, this traffic is killing me. This traffic is doing this to me. It's doing that to me. Blah, blah, blah. Traffic is never doing anything to you. Traffic is just traffic. It's what you're thinking about traffic that's doing the whole thing. You see, it's done with your mind. What did Kenneth Fox say? If you want to teach children anything, teach them that we live in a mental world. And we must remember that we live in a mental world. And that's what I remembered last night. Dallas, this is a mental world. You're the one that's causing this. It has nothing to do with the CD not having sound. It has to do with what you're thinking. And I can change my thinking. So you have to learn to be able to change your thinking constantly. You have to be able to get off point. You know, children are very happy. Why are children very happy? Because they can change their mind instantly. One moment they're fighting with some child and hate that child. The next moment they're playing together because they can change. They can give up very quickly. Children do not have viewpoints. Only grown-ups have viewpoints. And grown-ups have to hold on to their viewpoints. Don't hold on to a viewpoint. Remember, have many points to view, but not a viewpoint. If you have a viewpoint, you just put yourself in a box. Now you can't get out of that. Now you're going to argue that. In the Course in Miracles, it always says, argue your limitations and they will be yours. Anything you argue about is yours, you see. So don't argue with your mind. Let that go. Know that you are not your mind. Let go of your preconceived ideas of things. Let go of your expectations, you see. And let go of your opinions and your viewpoints. Learn to change. Learn to be flexible. And know that the mind is flexible and that the mind can change. At any age, the mind can change. They absolutely know that now because of this thing called plasticity. Your brain changes. It's plastic. It can do things, you see. But we get in this idea that it does that. The only reason why the mind looks like it's solid or has solidity to it is because the mind likes to take the road of least resistance. And if you keep taking the road of least resistance, you wear a rut in your mind. So your mind will always fall back into that rut because that's the easiest place for it to go. What does that mean? That means those synapses in your head are used to sparking it to the next one, the next one, the next one. So they just keep going down that way. But if you know anything about them, if you have a brain cell, there's more than one synapse. So say there's five synapses. Well, if you just keep using the one synapse all the time and you're so used to using that, how are you ever going to think something new? You have to be able to make your other synapses go off. And you do that every time you try something new. Every time you change your mind, you can get that out. You can move that out. One of the best ways to discover the power that you have with your mind is to work with the body. And if you can change your body through exercise and so forth, you can change your mind. You see, it's a connection, the body-mind connection. But once you realize that, now you realize, huh, it's done with my mind, it's done with my brain. And you open up new areas. That's what this whole life experience is about. Learning to use more. Remember years ago they said we used 10% of our brain. Only 10%. Now they think we only use 5% of our brain. getting lower. But there's 95% or 90% of our brain we don't use. Now, you do not have those things not to be used. Why would a creator create that extra 95%? If you're only going to use 5%, you'd only have 5% of the brain. The brain would be a little small thing, you see. It's like body parts and so forth. People say, oh, when I was having gallbladder trouble, immediately they said, oh, have your gallbladder removed, it's expendable. I said to you, it may be, to me it's not. I was born with it, and I plan on living and dying with my gallbladder, thank you, and I'll figure out a way to fix this, which I did, you see. But we love to just go right down the line, don't we? Oh, well, that's the easiest thing to do. Let's just do that. Life is very wonderful. And sometimes it is difficult. Sometimes it isn't as easy as you think it should be. But that gives you a chance to grow. That gives you an opportunity to open up a new area in your brain and to think differently. So you have to realize, did I tell you every morning when I do my bowing exercises, when I go up this way, I always say, give me the strength, the power, and the wisdom of God. The strength, the power, and the wisdom of God. And then I see that coming down. Now, how do I see that coming down?
The wave of light.
It's your imagination.
I use my imagination.
That was my imagination.
The largest tool you have. You see, and we keep doing that. I used to do that all the time. Talk about imagination more, but we're going to talk about it because you see, people forget it so quickly. You say, how do I do that? How do you do anything? You do it with your imagination. You do it with your mind, you say. If you want to see, you can get your imagination to do that for you. You can get your imagination to do that for you. Your mind then will go to work on that, you say. But you have to do something with yourself. And you have to realize that that can be done. You can't sit around and say, I believe in God and I know that God is all there is, and God is all around me, and God is in as and through me, and I live, move, and have my being in God, and then not be able to say, give me the strength, the power, and the wisdom of God. If God is all there is, you have to have that. You have to have that. So you have to use that, you see, and you use your imagination to bring that in to you. You can read all the books in the world. You can read the Bible. You can read all kinds of scriptures and sacred books and so forth. But you have to use your imagination while you're using them if you want anything to go inside of you. Otherwise, it's nothing. It's just a bunch of reading, you see. This teaching is called metaphysics, religious science, science of mind, call it what you will, is a practical teaching. It's made to be used. It's not here just to talk about and theorize about and get airy-fairy about. It's here to absolutely use. So is God. How many times have I said, God is mighty? Everyone knows God's mighty. You know God's mighty, don't you? Yeah. Well, do you know that God is useful? No, you don't think about it because no one says that. They say God's mighty. So, okay, God's mighty. You have to know that God is not only mighty, God is useful, and then you have to start to use God. And boy, when you say I'm using God, people, oh, how dare you use God? What else are you going to use, people? Think about it. If we say there's only God, what else are we going to use? You have to learn to use God. When I said earlier, you have to change your mind about yourself. You also have to change your mind about God and give up those stories that you've heard all your life about God. Especially at this time of year. And I'll quickly go into this. I read you a fairy tale tonight. If you want to go do this, this is why I've been defrocked. If you want a fairy tale, do the Christmas story. Jesus born in a manger. Three wise men show up. A star is here. That's going on. That, but do you really think that that happened? That's an absolute out-and-out fairy tale. Now, it doesn't matter that it's a fairy tale. And it doesn't take anything away from this man called Jesus. It doesn't take anything away from God. But you have to know that kind of stuff. Does everyone realize why we celebrate Christmas? Why does the Christian church celebrate Christmas?
Here, right now, they celebrate it because they replaced a religious ordinance with a pagan ceremony.
Yes, absolutely, with a pagan ceremony.
It was the winter solstice, and they said, hey, we're tired of the pagans, let's celebrate Christ's birth.
Yes, almost all religious holidays were pagan holidays. Easter was a pagan holiday. But to get people to join the church, they had to incorporate that. So now people think it was an out-and-out Christian idea. It was never an out-and-out Christian idea. And then we started to get all the other traditions, pine trees and so forth. You know, the evergreen was brought in, the Yule log. We haven't heard that. All that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not condemning any of that. All that stuff is beautiful, you see. What I'm saying and asking is, learn to think. And learn to think for yourself. This teaching does not teach you what to think. It teaches you how to think. I just put ideas out there so that you start to think differently. Otherwise, you go right down the road. What did Benjamin Franklin say?
If
everyone's thinking alike, then no one is thinking. And no one is thinking. No one wants to, because they think it's heresy to say anything against the church, or to say, oh, well, that's a lovely story, but I really don't believe it. That's a lovely story, but I really don't believe it. The story doesn't make any difference. In religious science, we believe everything that Jesus said, but very little that's been said about him. Very little that's been said about him. Tons of things have been said about Jesus, and if you read the Bible, you will see that. But if you take the Bible and you read about Jesus, we only know 23 days of his life. It's only 23 days of his life that are documented. You see. So there had to be other things going on also. But when they were forming this whole church and so forth, they had to come up with these wonderful little stories. The Nativity. And having this great big thing about the Nativity never came into existence till St. Francis was the one who made that popular, and then other people and churches started to take that on. Before that, there was no Nativity. You see. And all that stuff is good. But you have to think about it, you see. The same way that you've been taught all your life that God is mighty. But tonight, the first time you heard, God is useful, isn't it? So you have to use God, you know. Give me the strength and the power and the wisdom of God. Let this power that we call God operate in and as and through me. Let it keep me well, you see. And it does do that, you see. You can heal your body, you can heal your mind. Why can you do that? Because you're not your body and you're not your mind. Your body is yours to use and your mind is yours to use. So what is using that? Well, spirit or soul is using that, and you have to know what is my spirit and what is my soul. But we get so convinced that these bodies are really us, that they belong to us, and, you know, we have to realize that we can change our bodies, they can change our mind. You see? So during this Christmas season, look at all the different things and be glad. I mean, I love to look at all the lights. I think it's wonderful that everything is festive and so forth. But use it in the right manner and think differently. And now realize that God is useful. How would you use God now?
Probably for better feelings.
Aha. Now, feelings are the life of the organism. And you always have to change your feelings if you want something to come into your life. You see, it's not done with thought. It's done with thought and feeling, which means the head and the heart. When the head and the heart relate to each other, you have what's called a manifestation, meaning you get what you want, you see. But people, these feelings, you see, you have to learn to feel the feelings that you want to feel, you see. So, if you're having feelings, and the feelings I think that you're having are negative, your mind is telling you something negative about yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's because you don't know that you're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. So work on those. Do you know that you're a wonderful human being?
Sometimes.
But you must know that all the time. See, we all know it. Sometimes we must learn to know that all the time. I still get out of the shower every morning, look in my mirror and say, wonderful, wonderful me. I'm looking good today. You have to do that. It sounds silly.
There's a good share in life.
Yes.
Did you say
it? Then laugh. Yeah. But it all, everything, even the shower, everything to me, when I say thank you, that I have a warm shower. I say, oh, isn't this wonderful? Look, I have a warm shower. You see? Mm-hmm. And I deserve it. I'm worthy deserving. You see? Mm-hmm. So you can learn to do that. It makes your life so much better. Who wants to sit around hating themselves or feeling bad about themselves and sink down into that pit of despair all the time? You know, we're the ones who have to listen. So you have to listen to your mind. You have to become a witness to your thinking. You have to be able to know what your mind is doing to you. And then you have to say, well, this is not me. This is just my mind. Do you think last night when I was watching, when that my mind went off, I watched it a lot. Well, this isn't me. This is my mind saying, oh, Dallas, you've been taken again. Whatever the damn thing's saying to you half the time. You have to get rid of that, you see. You have to get rid of that. There are too many people out there in the world, in our world today, that don't feel good about themselves. And if you don't feel good about yourself, what are you contributing to the world? You're contributing misery. And you're making everyone around you miserable. Then the other person gets miserable, and it just gets contagious, doesn't it? Remember how contagious laughter is? Why can't we do that one? You see? We have to set these examples. We're the ones who have to do that. And again, if you're sitting around waiting to be happy, forget it. You have to make yourself happy. If you're sitting around to be filled with joy, forget it. You see, you have to make yourself joyous. Happiness and joy are all around you. Why aren't you seeing and feeling that? Because you're allowing your mind to tell you something else. And they're always here. So you have to learn how to change your mind. The whole essence of this teaching is, not only is it done unto you as you believe, if you believe you're miserable, you see? Right? And that's how it goes. It's done with your own thinking. It's done with your own thinking. The universe only mirrors back to you, or this thing that we call God. I use those two are one and the same, you see. God and the universe are one and the same. God and you are one and the same. Did you know that? You did? Okay. Do you know all that you are is God?
Well, I thought I had a little Satan from time to time. That's probably why I'm here.
All right. So you have to give up that idea that there's a Satan out there. That there's a thing.
Well, not really. I don't really believe in the devil, but it's just a frame of speaking.
I know, like, but it's all done with the frame of speaking.
I have a bad feeling sometimes.
Yes, you're burning.
That's God in me.
Right. You know? Words have power. Your word is your wand. So you can learn. You'll learn all that. I never even give that a thought. I don't give thoughts to the devil, badness, or any of that kind of stuff. Just not years ago, yes, when I was in that world out there where they have to. That's the devil made you do it. Yeah. No, I made myself do that. Mm-hmm. You see, there's no one to blame anything on but your thinking. There's no one to blame anything on but yourself, and you take responsibility for that. If you cannot take responsibility for something, you cannot change it. As soon as you take responsibility for it, you can change it. You say, well, he made me do it. Well, you can't change it because it's outside of you. See, and nothing is outside of us. Everything is inside of us. So all that joy, happiness, gratitude, love, bliss, everything that you want is residing inside of you. Is residing inside of you. And you have to go in there and find that. Quickly, the story about the gods years ago were angry with the humans. And one god said, well, let's hide from the humans. And one, well, where will we hide? They'll find us. They said, oh, we'll go to the mountaintop. No, they'll find us there. We'll go to the bottom of the sea. No, they'll find us there. Finally, one of them said, let's go and hide inside of them. They'll never look there. And humans don't look there. We look on the outside of life. And we look for God on the outside of life, by the way. And God is inside of you. You say, you're looking for God in the sky. Well, God is the sky. You say, but look inside of your own self and use this mind, use this imagination that you have. Make your mind work for you. You see, if you don't control your emotions and you don't control your mind and emotions will control you, and they'll take you where? Right down the tubes. Easiest thing in the world to do that spiral right down. Mm-hmm. So, don't do that, you see. Use your thinking. Okay? You'll learn quickly.
I have a lot of undoing to do.
We all have a lot of undoing to do. And that's what it's all about. We've learned the wrong thing. And we took it from people and from organizations and so forth. Who had credentials, we thought. So we thought they must know what they're talking about. Now you have to start thinking for yourself and realize they weren't out to do harm or anything. They didn't know any better. They just didn't know any better. But now you do. Once you start to think for yourself, you have no excuses left, you see. And you can't make your life one excuse after the other. And most people do. Well, I didn't get it because of da 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 da. No. Don't make excuses. Do it. Do it. Do it your way. Okay. So anyway, back to the thing. This class is called Prosperity and Abundance Including Money. So we want, at this time of year, we want to see that money. Don't we? But make sure it's the right thing that you're seeing out there. Look at all the people now that are spending money and spending themselves right into debt so they'll be miserable the rest of the year. That is not prosperity and abundance including money. That is not that. Don't feel guilty about things. No, this is the time of year when you say, oh, I must get that person a present. I must do this. No, you mustn't do anything. What is the only thing that you must do?
Love yourself.
That's the only obligation that you have. You must love yourself. You see? So if somebody gives you a present, you don't only give them one, say, oh, thank you very much, and take the present. And ask them for more. Well, I do. It works every time. But don't fall for all that stuff that's going on out there. See? A lot of things going on out there. So back to the fairy tale. Remember that your bag is always full. And somebody got into your mind and told you to become stingy that it would run out. And you can call it the wicked old witch if you want, but that wicked old witch is your mind. And your ego mind. And the ego mind is always going to tell you that you're not enough, that you don't do enough, and that you don't have enough. It is always going to tell you that. Your ego mind is never going to be satisfied. It's absolutely an impossibility. You see? So you have to know that. Say, well, that's just my ego mind. And I am enough. I have enough and I do enough. You see? Don't fall for that little trick. That mind will get you every time. All right, let me do some affirmations for you for money and other things. I always give my best. I always give my best. You see? We must always strive to be the very best person that we can be. And you have to decide, what does that mean? Always do your very best. And we all, inside, have a little thing that tells us when we're doing our very best and when we're trying to get away with something. It's called a consciousness. So, I always give my best. People value and honor my work. People value and honor my work. And you must learn to value yourself and honor your work. What do you do? See? You want that one? I know my... Oops. Oh, did I do two? No, guess not. I know my value. I honor my worth. I honor my worth. You have to know that you're worth something. That you're worth something. How many people here feel that they're worth something? Hesitant. I know. If we can hesitate.
It's more than I had. That's for sure. It's more than I used to have.
We have to build this. We have to work on this. You have to work on your self-esteem. You have to work on everything constantly. Absolutely, you have to do it. Mm-hmm. But you have to honor yourself. You see why you're doing it. And people get themselves into all these situations and they don't honor themselves. And this is the time of year when people get themselves into these horrible money things. That is not honoring yourself. That is not valuing yourself at all when you do something like that. If you at the present moment don't have money, then don't spend any. Just don't spend it. You see? And you'll like yourself for that much more. You know, there's nothing wrong with not having money. We were talking earlier about cougarans. Mm-hmm. Does everyone know what a cougaran is?
Yeah.
It's a coin from Australia. Gold coin from Australia.
South Africa.
South Africa, sorry. I knew a lady, her name was Magda Cornford. She came from South Africa. When I was in the real estate business, and she came loaded with cougarans. She bought up a lot of property in Georgia, in Atlanta. And I had one of her properties, and I was selling it for her. And I sold it. And at closing, and she was just an absolutely gorgeous woman, and dressed always just beautifully and very refined. And oh. So anyway, at closing, they said, well, you'll have to come up with $8,000 to close this to her. She just very graciously got up from the table, walked over to the window, looked out, and then she turned around and she said, no, I don't think that's my problem. That's your problem. You have to figure out how to come up with the $8,000. And they sat there and came up with the $8,000. Mm-hmm. By manipulating the figures on the closing statement, which you can do. And they did it. I thought that was the most marvelous thing. She didn't get frightened. She knew who she was. She knew, you know, she's, no, that's your problem, not mine. And they did it. They figured it out for her. You see? Marvelous. You have to remember those type of things. Most people would run out. I had people get up from the table and run out and try to scrape up money quickly to come back in. You see? You don't. Don't do that to yourself. Know who you are. Who are you? An individualized expression of God. That's what we all are. Individualized expressions of God. And this is the time of year to remember that. Especially when all the festivities are going on. And when all this religious stuff is going on. Learn to get the right idea about yourself. And see yourself and hold yourself in that. highest of esteem, and then carry it into the new year and carry it the whole year through, and you'll find out how wonderful it is. Yes. And it is wonderful, and so are you, and so am I, and therein is the lesson. Thank you.
Woohoo!